today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
I think we're looking at a fundamental change. The biggest misconception I see is that people expect it's like when cars came along and people were expecting horse-drawn carts, kind of just with motors. You know, they replaced the horse with a motor instead of thinking ahead and looking at what cars might be in the future. And they have totally changed. They're not just they didn't just replace horses with motors. And I think the same is going to happen in photography, where there are a few things that are pretty clearly on the horizon, and then there are a few things that, yeah, my guess is as good as yours.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast with Raymond Hatfield, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your photography skills. Raymond interviews the world's top photographers in their field to ask questions that will get you taking better photos today. Now, with you as always, husband, father, home brewer, L.A. Dodger fan, and Indianapolis wedding photographer, Raymond Hatfield.
Welcome back. Welcome to 2019. I am Raymond, your host of the Beginner Photography Podcast, and we have done it. We have arrived to the future. If you're listening to this, welcome. Also, if you're listening to this in like 2025, let me know how 2019 turned out. That would be great. I'd love to know. I hope that you had a great New Year's. I really didn't do much, honestly. You know, in years past, I've done a lot. Last year, we had like a little family get together, and that was fun. But this year, my wife had to work, so it was just me and the kids. Charlie had piano lessons, and I was in bed pretty early, in fact. So we cut the cord earlier this year, so I stayed up to try to like watch like the ball drop. But unfortunately, you can't do that when you cut the cord. At least we can. So I went to bed. So I hope I really hope that you took some time over the past month to really reflect on where you were in 2018. As far as your photography goes, and where you want to be in 2019, because I just think that, you know, New Year's, it really gets me thinking about the future, and thinking about the future is fun and exciting. You know, there's so many opportunities, and every year, this should have been my intro fact today, dang it, I've always had this idea to make a journal of everything that I ate in a year, like for an entire year, like make a coffee table book. Unfortunately, like 6 years ago, no, I guess it was like 8 years ago, I found that somebody had already done that, and I bought the book, and it was way better than anything that I could have come up with. So I didn't do that. But the point of that being is that, like, it's a fresh start, it seems like, you know, and it's always fun and just like an exciting time. There's like electricity in the air. So thinking about the future is really exciting for me, and that is why I have brought on Chris Marquardt today onto the podcast. He is the host of the Future of Photography podcast, and today we get to talk about, you know, this really exciting time to be alive and where we are headed. But if you just got a brand new camera for the holidays and are thinking, wait, I don't even know how to work this thing, and now I have to worry about the future of photography? Well, no. This interview is more of a fun mental exercise, and not how to change everything you know or don't know. So this isn't like, you know, you need to buy this camera and that, because this is where the future is headed. This is, like I said, it's two photographers talking about the future of photography, where we're headed, and it's just a fun interview, I think, to listen to. It was definitely a fun one to be a part of. With that, let us get into today's interview with Chris Marquardt. Today's guest is Chris Marquardt, a photographer, author, and host of the Future of Photography podcast. And what better time to talk about the future of photography than the start of a new year? So, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I am really excited for this episode today, because I know that we're technically recording this here in 2018. This is going to come out in 2019. And the beginning of a new year is always exciting, because there's new camera technology. We always have these grand ideas of what the future is going to hold, and we never seem to figure it out. There's all this new technology, and I really want to chat with you about that today. But before we get into that, I know that you've been shooting for years. Can you tell me how it all started photography-wise for you?
Oh, just out of interest. I have no formal education. I'm completely self-taught. I started shooting when I was 14, and that was my first SLR with film back then, and it just kept going and going, and I was interested, and I learned, and I improved, and then I went digital, and then I rediscovered analog after a while, actually, so I'm shooting both film and digital, and yeah, that's how I got here, just by being curious.
So what was it that drew you into the first place? What was it about that first camera that you saw that you thought, oh, I got to pick that up?
I was always interested in some form of artistic expression, even though I didn't really know back then that was a thing, to freeze a moment and to show a picture that you want to show. So with photography, you always have this ability to leave things out, to design things, to compose things. And that was quite appealing to me.
Yeah. Now, I know that you said that you were self-taught. What would you say was the hardest part about the technical side of photography for you to learn?
Honestly, the technical side is probably the more easy one for me, because I do have an art background, but also a technical background. I used to work in the computer industry for a while. I used to do all the internet stuff, and I always ended up being the kind of the link, the translator between like business people and tech people. And so I was always kind of in the middle there. And with photography, I see myself somewhere in a similar role, because I understand the art side of it quite well, but I also understand the technical side. And bringing those two together, I think that's the sweet spot.
Right. So was there anything that was difficult for you to understand? Was it like composition or just seeing the light, anything like that?
Well, seeing the light is obviously kind of the thing. The moment I understood light better, that was when my photography really changed. And I would recommend for everyone to do just that little, you know, the egg assignment, where you take you take a hard-boiled egg. You take like a desk lamp in a dark room, and then you photograph that by lighting it with that desk lamp from different angles, different distances, different heights, changing the size of that light source. And that, as simple and as funny as that sounds, this is really a very good way to get a better idea of what does that do. I mean, that egg can stand in for anything, like a head in a portrait shot or something along those lines. So you can easily translate that, what you learned there, and it will help you in your photography. And that's a good first step. A second exercise that is easy to do is look out of a window where you live and photograph the building next door, a tree, something that's there, and do that repeatedly over, I don't know, a few months, a few years. Every now and then, take that same photo in different lighting conditions. And I did this with, like, I live here in Germany, and I had this view of a church, and there were all these different light situations, in overcast, in direct sunlight, in the evening sun, during a thunderstorm, with dark clouds behind it, with bright clouds behind it. And that just in total ended up being a really good exercise, going back to those pictures and just understanding what light will actually do to a photo.
Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos. Yeah, I would imagine that just observing light is something that is difficult to get started with. But once you kind of understand it, where it's coming from and how it can change the
properties of it. And it takes a while, you know?
Right.
It takes a while. I know people always are looking for the silver bullet, something that will get them from 1 to 100 in a few minutes. And no, you have to take a bit of time and practice these things, and the practice will make you better.
Yeah, yeah. Would you recommend doing the egg experiment several times?
Sure.
Yeah.
Every now and then. And it doesn't have to be an egg. I mean, take anything that nicely reflects light and play with it. Look at the different light sources you have available. It could be a bigger surface light source. It could be just a point light source from a little LED flashlight or something. And experiment with that, with the size of the light, with the distance of the light, with the strength of the light, with the direction of the light. And yeah, be playful. I think that's what helps most.
Yeah, exactly. That curiosity is really going to kind of bring you to that next spot for sure. Now, so we know that you picked up this film camera and then you kind of progressed to digital, you said. Can you tell me how far along into your journey of photography were you until when you first picked up that digital camera, and what did that mean to you?
Must be over 20 years into my photography when digital came along, and being a bit of a tech head myself,
it's really exciting.
Going into digital was exciting because I didn't have to wait for my photos to come back from a lab. It was just immediate, and that's what also gave me an additional boost in my learning, because you have the immediate feedback and you just learn very, very quickly, especially these kind of things, the light things. You have much more of an immediate feedback there, and that changed a lot of things. And I ended up selling my SLRs right away, and that was, in retrospect, it was a bit of a mistake. But it was really kind of a revelation how fast everything moved forward all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's funny because I think that photography and technology have this really like beautiful relationship together. Even from the beginning, like literally like the first camera. So can we kind of start, before we start going forward about the future of photography, can you kind of give us a history lesson of photography and let us know how we got here?
So this all started, I mean, I don't want to go into like the daguerreotype and all this very old stuff, but pretty much film photography is what photography was. And it started with large formats, with big formats. And those shrunk over time because film became better and you didn't have to have the bigger surfaces anymore. And I think the longest format that we've had around is 35 millimeter. Oscar Barnack, Leica employee, came up with that. And it has been the gold standard for almost ever now. And so that's what a lot of people who came to photography through SLRs are used to. And interesting enough, if you look at on the film side, that comes from the bigger formats. And if you look from the digital side, it's kind of hard to make bigger sensors. It's expensive to do that. So the sensors were really tiny and they kept growing until they ended up calling it full frame. If you speak German, you know that the 35 millimeter format in German is called small format. And so the film heads call it small format and the digital ones call it full format. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
And it is kind of a sweet spot in terms of manufacturing. And we're seeing a lot of mirrorless full frame cameras coming out now. But yeah, the history is film, and film has pretty much gone for a while, and now it's kind of coming back, and it's interesting. A lot of people who didn't shoot film are getting interested in how it relates to photography and what it can do for you. So that's one of the reasons I'm doing film again, because it gives me access to different formats like medium format, large format, and it also kind of slows me down and gives me a physical result. I can touch the negative, and
yes, that's always so much fun.
That adds so much value, so much perceived value to the photo, and so much happiness, because our digital photos are all somewhere in the cloud, right? They're just
right.
Not, you cannot touch them until you print them. And with film photography, you have access, you have a haptic experience, and that's, I think, a very good thing.
Yeah, of course. Do you think that's the main reason, or that's the main motivating driver for the rest of the industry to start picking up film again?
Well, on the one hand, yes. On the other hand, it's also financial reward. If you look at Fujifilm, who are big in digital cameras, but they also came from film. They also make film still. Fuji Instax, the instant photo product that they have, is their biggest cash cow. Makes more money than all of their digital stuff together. So people want that experience, to have that physical photo, the one of a kind thing. That just adds value, perceived value, and that is makes photography different. And another thing that film photography does is it teaches you a lot, because with our cameras, I mean, they do everything for us, right? We press the shutter and they focus and they expose and they some even choose the moment when to shoot, so it's a guaranteed smiling photo.
Yeah.
and with film, there's a lot of stuff that you have to be aware of, that you have to take care of. And even though we don't really need it, it's good to have those skills even when you shoot digital, because often the camera doesn't get it quite right. And if you manage to overwrite and to take control of some of the things, you'll be a better photographer. So film teaches you, and you can take those things back into digital and be a better photographer that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It is fun. It is that tangible result that you get knowing that you got the perfect moment. There's really not much mm-hmm. better than that. But as far as today, here we are, right? We have cameras that are small enough to fit in our pockets with great ISO performance. We have all the megapixels we need, and these cameras are waterproof, right? Like, is that, don't we have enough now? Like, is this it? Is this the best?
We never have enough.
That's a very American way of thinking there, Chris.
Well, I'd be happy with the cameras I have right now. But then I'm also curious. I mean, that's what's one of the reasons that Adrian and I, my partner and I, started the Future Photography podcast, because we are both kind of rooted in film. We both shoot digital, and we are both really curious about where this is going. And I mean, if you look just again a bit at the history, there are some pivotal moments in photography, some moments where things changed. And one was definitely back the original Leica rangefinder cameras shooting 35 millimeters. Another thing where it really changed was when SLRs came along, when you had when you could see the photo through the lens, which is in digital is easy, but in a mechanical way with mirrors and stuff and a prism, that's not really
much
that
more
simple. Yeah. But that really changed a lot of things. The shutter in the camera used to be in the lens, and then it moved into the camera. So the lenses became cheaper. So photography became more accessible. And then they started adding computers to the cameras to help you with exposure, and motors to help you with focus. And that all changed it and made it more accessible to people again. And then it turned the whole thing turned digital, which again made it way more accessible to people. And then there was miniaturization, and that, I mean, every person on this planet has a camera in their pocket now. At least one.
Several, yeah.
At least one. And you always have it with you. And those are incredibly powerful nowadays. And the one thing that's now happening, I think we're right in the middle of another big shift, and that is the computational photography, where a lot of things are not done in hardware anymore, where a lot of things are done by computation, by software. And I think that's what we're looking at right now.
There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients, or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear, like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
Yeah, I think that's what is getting really exciting, right? Because once again, this is the curiosity. This is where who knows what can happen with this camera when a computer is involved. And it's one of the things that I definitely want to get into for sure. But before we do that, what do you think is one of the misconceptions people have about the future of photography and just having more cameras?
Well, the one thing that I think is kind of over at this point is the megapixel race.
Sure.
I mean, they're not 20 megapixels, they're now 35 and 40 and 50, but I don't think this will go on forever because you don't really have much benefit from more pixels.
Sure.
So I think one of the misconceptions is that it's just going to be more of the same, just more and bigger. I think we're looking at a fundamental change. The biggest misconception I see is that people expect it's like when cars came along and people were expecting the horse drawn carts kind of just with motors, you know. They replaced the horse with a motor instead of thinking ahead and looking at what cars might be in the future, and they have totally changed. They didn't just replace horses with motors. And I think the same is going to happen in photography, where there are a few things that are pretty clearly on the horizon, and then there are a few things that, yeah, my guess is as good as yours.
Hey, Raymond here, and we will get back to today's interview in just a moment. But first, did you know that shooting a manual is the choice of professional photographers all over the world for one reason? It gives them full control of their camera so that they can capture the image that they visualize in their head. But how do you know which settings for you to use and when? Well, let me help you out with my free ebook, Picture Perfect Camera Settings, that you can grab for yourself over at perfectcamerasettings.com. In it, I share images that I've shot over the years with real camera settings and the info on knowing which setting is the most important to change in which situations so that you can be on your way to learning manual mode too. More than 3,000 photographers just like you have downloaded it already, so grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com. Now, let's get back to today's interview. Okay, so let's get into that a little bit then, because we're currently living in an age which is definitely one of the craziest times to be alive in the history of photography. And which you couldn't have said like 20 years ago, right? We might have been at the pinnacle at that point 20 years ago. But today, like you said, there's a fundamental shift happening. And it's because of computation and information technology. Cameras where you can choose your focus point after you've taken the photo. Or cameras that automatically adjust the settings based on what it sees in front of the camera. Or recommend compositional changes just based on AI, but we're still at the beginning of all of this technology.
Oh, yes.
Even though it's changing, like there's no doubt about it, we are at the beginning of this technology. Do you think that we can see what the future truly holds for photography, or are we still looking way too narrowly minded?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, that's with every fundamental shift in a technology or a cultural shift that comes with it. I remember when I was younger, and we still had records and CDs, and I envisioned the music to turn into like little chips almost like an SD card, you know? And I envisioned that you'd go into a store and buy one of these little chips with music on it. What I totally didn't see was the internet. You know, so I thought I had a vision there, but I totally missed that one thing. And now music just comes streaming to us. So I think we are bound to make the same mistakes when thinking into the future of photography. We are going to not see some fundamental things that are going to happen sometime sooner or later. I think that's just a... it's just a fact. It's hard to really predict the future. If it was easy, I'd probably be rich by now.
Yeah, I was going to say we'd all be millionaires for sure. It's funny, just kind of bouncing off your experience with music. When I was in, it must have been like middle school, so like 7th or 8th grade, is when I saw the first like RCA MP3 player, and like inside it had like 16 megabytes of storage, right? Extremely tiny. And I knew, like, the moment that I held that in my hand, I was like, this is the future. This is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. Because kind of like you, I thought, I can just switch out the chips and just put them in. And like, it's a much smaller package. So I had saved, like, an entire summer's worth of, like, mowing lawns to buy this thing. And the day that I went to go buy it, my stepdad went with me. And he saw it. And he's like, he literally said, this technology is going nowhere. People have spent so much money on CDs. Nobody is going to buy this MP3 player. It makes no sense. And here we are. And my stepdad was wrong. And I always love to rub that in his face. So we'll go ahead and move on from that. But I think it's funny because like you said, I never would have guessed when I had my Moto Razr or even this Sony, you know, floppy disk Mavica, right, that I was using in yearbook, that we would be to where we are today. That is a glorified button. That's all that it does, right? It just opens up the shutter. It makes no decisions whatsoever. And then it's done. And now here we are at a time where you can take amazing photos without any intervention as far as the camera goes. Do you think that that is going to degrade the perceived value of photography? Because that's something that I think about a lot.
I think there's still a lot of value in being a skillful photographer. Because
today,
absolutely, and in the future, because you are... the cameras take a lot of decisions from us, but then the camera doesn't really know what our artistic intent is. So if... I mean, simple example. I take a picture of you in front of a bright doorway, and that's a backlight situation, and the camera will probably look in its memory and find a correction factor for that and go, okay, that is the person. Does the photographer doesn't want to silhouette the person, they want to see the person, and then they'll brighten the exposure, and then you have a nice picture of a person. But what about if you want that silhouette? The camera doesn't know that. So I think until the moment when cameras can read minds, we are still going to need photographers who can control the technology and manage the technology in a way to get a result that they intend to do. Art is just not something that you can program into a camera at this point. You can cover the 80-90% of the situations just fine. Most people will be happy with the results, but if you want actual control over what the camera does, you will still need to be able to push the right buttons and have access to some of those settings.
Do you think that we'll ever get to a point in time to where where the camera can look at all of the past photos that we have taken, define our style in some sort of algorithm, and capture an image based on our past history of the photos that we've taken?
I mean, that is probably possible today with a proper with a proper neural network and the according training and your all your photos in one location, such as Google Photos or Lightroom or something. But I still don't think that would be helpful, because if you're an artist, you might want to try something different, you know? If you want to stick with your style for the rest of your life, hey, sure, no problem. But
that's a good point.
I don't think I want that. If I look at my photography, I try to keep projects kind of work together, sets of photos that you can hang up next to each other on the wall and they look cool. But then if I look at different projects, there's so many differences in style that I shoot because I want to experiment, I want to grow, I want to learn. And the camera just doing the same thing over and over for me, that doesn't help.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be quite a learning curve for sure. Mm-hmm. When it comes to photography, I think the allure of photography, which started from the very beginning with the daguerreotype, like you mentioned there, is its ability to immerse us in another place and time, right? Like that's what's exciting. Suddenly sure. You can go to another location you've never been before and feel like you're experiencing it. And a few years ago, I was trying to kind of figure out, like, well, what does that mean for the future of photography, right? Where is that going to take us? If a photograph is more powerful, the more that we're able to immerse ourselves in that situation, shouldn't something like a 360 camera, either like photos or video, be like the ultimate experience?
That is certainly something that we can strive for. I mean, they are trying it, but the cameras don't have the resolution yet. We mm-hmm. do not really have frameworks to look at those in a good way. You definitely want some VR, AR headset or something to immerse yourself in there. Don't like the like holding up your phone and moving it around.
Sure, of course,
to look
yeah.
at it. That does not work for me. And as long as we don't have these devices, and as long as they are not everywhere in every person's pocket, that it's not going to happen. So I mean, it's probably just a few years until the first really accessible commercial AR headsets come out. But until then, and then it's probably another 10 years until they're really, really good. Mm-hmm. and retina and whatever you want. So until that's there and the according standards have been created to make that easily available to people, yeah, it's cool. I have one of those 360 cameras and I capture stuff when I travel, but I don't really have a good way to show that
share
to people
it.
At this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Let others experience that. Well, then if okay, so we don't have the framework for 360 cameras, but things like the Lytro camera, which if listeners listening don't know, you can choose your focus point after you've taken the photo, which is cool. And then there's that new, that Lite 16 phone camera with the 16 photos or 16 cameras and stuff. And now even something as basic as like Live Photos, which is built into Apple. You can just take a photo and it captures a video and audio at the same time. What current technology excites you most about the future?
I mean, we're seeing the whole capturing of depth in photos. We see that now with phones having more than one camera, and even with phones that have only one camera, they're at least trying to do that and have some software-based portrait mode where you get some out-of-focus background. But with actual depth information, and we haven't seen the last of that, there's Lite.co, the company that does this 16 camera brick.
16. Mm-hmm.
They are apparently now working on a smartphone with 9 cameras. And
okay.
What they
cut it in half.
Well, depth information is going to be, well, it's already big, but it's going to be bigger because the depth will allow you to do things that that used to be hard, like replacing a background, different
sure.
lighting effects. If I know the geometry of your face, I can point a virtual light source at it and light it realistically. So I can recreate a studio anywhere I want to do that. The whole movie industry is really looking into that right now. You know, when you shoot something and you want to replace the background in CGI, you will use a green screen. So they have to put these big green sheets up. And
yes.
If as the moment you have the depth information, you can shoot Game of Thrones in the parking lot and just replace the background. It's that easy all of a sudden. So that
yeah.
is going to change the way things are produced. It's going to be available. If you look at, if you have an iPhone with the depth cameras, which most of the current iPhones have, at least for your selfie camera, but also mm-hmm. for the other camera, there is an, let me find this app because it is absolutely amazing what that thing does. It's called Focos, FOCOS. I think it's $5 or $10, and it uses that depth information. It lets you refocus your iPhone photos. It lets you use the depth information and drop the background make the background darker or desaturate the background or put a different picture in the background. Now, it's not perfect yet because that depth information is still, I mean, this is early days. That depth information is just getting good enough, but give that another couple of years of development and that stuff will be so realistic that you won't really need those studio environments anymore.
That's going to be a crazy day for sure.
And it's not going to happen just like from 1 minute to the other. It's a gradual change. Of course, so you won't wake up at one point and go, oh, wow, everything's amazing now. No, it's a gradual change. And you'll look back and go, oh, wait a minute. 10 years ago, it was very different.
Yeah, for sure. That's too funny. Now that we're kind of talking about, I guess, like the post-production side of things and having the ability to manipulate backgrounds, where we're at today, more and more control can be taken away from us because of the computational information, especially in post, right? Like with auto edits and auto sorting and even sharing. Do you think that post-production will one day be a thing of the past?
Again, I don't think so, because we still want to have some control over what we do there, just from an artistic point of view. From a utilitarian point of view, hey, totally fine. I want a good exposure. I want to see someone's face. I want their eyes to be in focus. I want the background to not be too obtrusive. So let's automatically clone out the power plug, the power outlet that's in the corner and stuff. You know, that is fairly simple to do, I think, cleaning up photos and making them look good. As long as you are fine with what that thing does and you don't need to take any influence there. The moment we are going into the art, then we need control. We need to change things. But of course, I mean, the depth information is one thing. Let's look at content recognition, for example. Now it's kind of a normal thing. 10 years ago it wasn't, but now it's normal that you go into your camera roll on your phone and you type cat in the search and it finds the cats even though you didn't tag them, right? It does the tagging for you. I don't know, Apple at this point, I think they just started it. No, they just started it a couple of years ago. I think they recognize some 10,000 different things in photos now. So they can tell apart dogs from cats.
That's cool.
It's very, very sophisticated. It also, there are still mistakes, but in general, knowing what's in the photo is definitely going to be helpful for automated retouching. As I said, if there's a power outlet in the background that distracts from your subject, then the camera or the software will then know that that's there, and then it'll of course also know how to remove that. So cleaning up stuff is fine. Cleaning up facial features, I know if you have a pimple, then might want to take care of that. That kind of stuff is already there. They're already doing that. And lighting effects.
That's going to be interesting.
Lighting effects, again, with knowing what that thing is, the camera then can use the depth information plus that and then apply the proper lighting to things completely artificially.
I'm really excited for this for one, because I, as a photographer, I love getting out and I love shooting my kind of paid work, right? I love shooting weddings, I love shooting engagements, I love kind of the artistic side of that. But I have found in just very recent times, like within this past year, that when it comes to my personal life, I don't really take a lot of photos, right? I don't like to spend time editing the photos. I don't like to spend the time putting everything together. And I have noticed that in the past few years, things like Google Photos has made it so much easier just in my life to, you know, what's really interesting is that my children, I have a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old. And when they were both like newborns, they looked identical. Like, it's really scary, but like my wife and I cannot distinguish the two.
But your camera
looking at the baby photos, we can't distinguish the two. But Google Photos knows which one is Charlie and which one is Parker. And that is terrifying. And I think on top of being terrifying, it's also really exciting, obviously, for the future.
But at one point you had to tell it, this is Charlie and this is Parker, right?
No, this is the interesting part. I told Google Photos what 2-year-old Charlie looked like, and mm-hmm. I told Google Photos what 1-year-old Parker looked like, mm-hmm. and it
that's what I mean.
It keeps track.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's, never newborn.
It's interesting details that you will see in stuff like Face ID, where you unlock your phone with your face. That a lot of that is in the eyes and at the distance of the pupils and the distance of some features in the eyes that are very, very crucial there. And if you like slightly modify a photo and move the eyes just a few pixels apart from each other in the photo, and then
it's gonna think it's the other one,
then it won't recognize it anymore.
Jeez.
So if you want to hide your face from surveillance, try to
move your eyes apart a few.
I didn't say that, just hypothetically.
I gotcha. With all this excitement of new cameras, new technology, IT technology, I want to know for you, Chris Marquardt, what is in the perfect camera? Like, current technology aside, what would the perfect camera look like in the future of photography?
That is a good question, because I'm an old fart. You know, I want my mirrors. I'm happy with my DSLRs, and because I know them and I built up all the skill to use them. So that's something that's going to be taken away from me pretty soon, because I'm pretty sure my DSLRs are the last mirror-based cameras that I'm using.
Sure.
Their mirrors are on the way out, so their history, we see the full-frame mirrorless trend, and the viewfinders now, the electronic viewfinders have become so good that I'll probably be just fine with our mirror. So I'm not worried about that. But they are heavy beasts still, especially when you're looking at full-frame. So full-frame is... Yeah, it just kind of commands mandates the lenses
size.
to be big, because
yes.
Optics is that's just optics. So using smaller sensors and more of them, adding making cameras into camera arrays that are smaller, mm-hmm. something along the lines of what L16 does, the light.co.
Yes.
Is exciting. Now the product isn't there. I mean, read some of the reviews and you'll see that even the hardware is good, but the software is kind of a bit of a problem.
Lacking, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think they're there yet. And I think their move to a smartphone with multiple cameras in it is an interesting one, at least, because all that computation is sooner or later going to replace the big and heavy glass. And that's going to be painful for me, because I love my glass. I love my good lenses and the big, big chunks of metal. But on the other hand, having that available in smaller and much more easy to carry packages that give me the exact same quality or better, who wouldn't love that?
So, of course.
And speaking of the megapixels, I think we have plenty of resolution now, but I also said that when we were at 12 megapixels. So I don't think we can ever have enough, at least to a certain point. So I think there is still something in it. On the other hand, there are now algorithms out there that can resize photos without quality loss. They can upsize photos by synthesizing parts of the image. So
do you think that the future is going to be 5-megapixel sensors with 20-megapixel outputted files?
Or at least they use the current sensors and they run those through algorithms and have 20 megapixels in there and make 100 out of them. For some photography, I think that'll be just fine. It'll, again, not give you the exact thing you see, but something that is so good and so believable that... And this is not fantasy. This is already out there. These mm-hmm. algorithms are out there. I've seen examples that were just mind blowing, where they had like a small resolution photo of a bird and they blew it up big and the feathers were just perfect with all the fine detail. And what the thing did is was an AI that was trained on recognizing what is missing, and then it synthesized feathers that looked similar to the thing, but totally believable.
So it's not even just like filling in the missing data. It's going out finding stuff. New data. And
It has learned what feathers look like. It has learned what skin looks like and so on. That is a scary thought. But
yeah, because suddenly it's like all these years, you know, like in courtrooms, you hear that like a camera like cannot lie. But now here we are.
Cameras can lie quite well.
It will be lying as best as it can. Yeah, that's very scary. That's interesting. I'm going to have to look that up for sure.
Yeah.
Jeez.
We had a couple of episodes on the future of photography about exactly that, because it scares us as well.
And yeah,
it's but on the other hand, what we're looking at with photography, if it's not scientific photography, if it's more on the art side, it's evoking emotion, right? That's what it's all about. If someone loves a photo, they love it for reasons they probably don't even know. And at that point, I question if it's important that those feathers are the exact original feathers or if they're just very similar to the ones that should be there.
I think that's the right question. I think that's the right question right there. Yeah, I mean, it really is going to depend on the case, on what it's being used for. And I guess having access to whatever the original is going to be, because that's what's going to tell the truth, I guess. I don't know. I think my wife just watches way too many crime shows. That's all that I think about now when it comes to cameras.
In these days, truth is a very touchy concept.
It doesn't even always have the exact same definition, which is yep. what's most scary.
Yeah.
But yeah, all right. Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm definitely going to have to link to those episodes in the show notes of this episode. When it comes to people just getting started in photography today, they have more opportunity at their disposal than ever before. Do you think that there's any misinformation that they're being taught that you think is just that they just shouldn't be listening to?
Well, as much as people might hate that, but I think the simple answer is there is no silver bullet. You will still have to learn. You'll still have to spend the time and put in the work to become better. And not better at the technical side. That's very easy to learn, at least for tech-minded people. But it's still your responsibility to frame the shot, to compose the shot, to choose a focal length, to press the shutter button at a point in time, even though that is now kind of in the flux. But it's still your task to make the photo, to compose the photo. And that is something that takes a lot of looking at other photography, that takes trial and error, what works, what doesn't work, why does it work, why doesn't it work. And yeah, I think that's really important to learn and give it time and experiment. And don't be too afraid to share. Because even if you're just at the beginning of that process, sharing with others is going to give you feedback, is going to give you information as to how you want to go forward. So put in the work. Don't just take a photo on the weekend and go, I'm a photographer now. It'll just be a bit more effort.
Yeah, great advice right there. When it comes to growing your skills, Or I guess anything for that matter. Have you ever had an investment? I want to know what the best investment that you've ever made in yourself is, whether it's through money, time, or energy. What has advanced you most as a photographer?
Well, most of the things, investments are not financial. That the investment is the time, is the amount of photography that you do, because the best way to become better is by doing a lot of it. And if you have a way to kind of force you into it, maybe pick up assignments somewhere, pick up a job that makes you go out and shoot regularly, then you will put in the hours and you'll put in the time, and you'll, as a reward, you will become a better photographer. So I think that's probably the biggest investment that you can make. Just spend the time.
Yeah, and finding ways to force yourself to find that time.
I'm lazy. I mean, I need ways to do that. So the moment I started teaching it, I became much, much better. The whole podcasting, I've been podcasting for 14 years now, and that has really fueled my growth in photography, because I have to have content ready every week.
Yeah.
And that means I will get questions from people. I have to research stuff because, of course, I don't know everything. So that all together is, maybe start a podcast about photography. Everyone can.
There you go.
Nowadays, making a podcast isn't that hard. So everyone can do that. And teaching others is definitely a good way to advance that.
Yeah, I will let all the listeners know that if you think that starting a podcast is hard, I did it. And if I did it, you should see my high school transcripts. You will know that it does not require being very smart to start a podcast. It's very easy. So, again, great information. I want to know what advice, this is my last question for you. I know we're going over on time. I want to know what advice you would give to a new photographer about to set out on their photography journey. What information would you give that smart and driven new photographer?
Keep at it. Don't give up too quickly. There's this wonderful short snippet of Ira Glass. It's on YouTube. It's about creativity and about how you become better at things. And I'm just looking it up. We'll link to that in the show notes.
Absolutely.
The creative process and how you, I mean, let me try to paraphrase that, how you start off with something and you have killer taste. Everyone has taste and you see the good things and you want to do those things and you want to become good, but your skills are just not quite where your taste is. And that's kind of the level to achieve, to get your skills to where your taste is. And Ira Glass has a few interesting things to say about that. And it's definitely one of those very motivating things to watch. So I'll send you the link.
Absolutely. You're definitely not the first person to talk about the power of this talk that Ira Glass gave. Mm-hmm. It is, like you said, it's one of those things that sticks with you no matter what, where you're at, I guess, in your photography journey, for sure. So that will definitely be in the show notes of this episode.
Cool.
I'm sorry. I thought I just heard my wife screaming out there. She is okay. I think she's just laughing. That was
that's good.
I might have had to have cut this a little bit short. But Chris, before I do let you go, and I'm 90% positive she's okay, but I'm going to assume that the other 10% she is okay. Before I let you go, can you let listeners know where they can find you online?
I think the best place to look is on my own homepage, chrismarquardt.com. We'll give you the link. And that leads to everything, the podcasts and the books and the photo travel and everything else I do.
So I said that was the last question, but actually this is going to be the last question. With photography, we talked about it being a very immersive experience. And that's why I think social networks are kind of taking off, right? Because people like to experience other people's experiences, I guess. Do you have a favorite social network?
I'm still on Twitter mostly.
Oh, really? The most text-heavy platform
is your favorite. It handles photography quite well. I'm also on Instagram, and I'm a bit on Facebook, even though I'm not a real fan of Facebook. But Twitter would be probably my main hangout place online, yeah.
Was I right about that being just a fun interview to listen to? It's you know, it's one of those things that... It's hard to write questions for an interview like that because it's all just speculation. But I did have quite a few takeaways from this interview talking with Chris. And my biggest one, I think, was when I asked if computers will be able to learn our style and will shoot like us and edit how we edit. And just like, you know, replicate everything. And he replied with, you know, yeah, of course. But it might not be extremely useful because we still learn and grow as photographers every day, no matter where we are, you know, in our photography journey. And it just isn't, even if a computer could shoot in our style and edit in our style, it will become stagnant because if we just let the computers do all the work, then we're not going to be learning and growing as artists and as photographers. And that statement right there really pushed, I think, the usefulness of a photographer to me, at least out, a few more years. So Hey, I got a question for you. Did you get a new Amazon device this holiday season? If so, did you know that you could use it to start off every day by learning more about photography using our daily photo briefing? That's right. You can just ask Alexa to launch the daily photo brief. My Alexa just went off there. Oops, hold on. Okay. Or you can just search for photography in the Alexa app and add it to your daily flash briefing, which is great because every morning you can wake up and learn more about photography while you are in the shower or brushing your teeth or even making coffee. You know, it requires no extra time out of your day. You can do what you're already doing and become a better photographer soon. So now it is time. It is time to announce the winner of the GoPro Hero 7 Black. That is a really long name. GoPro. Why don't they just take out the word hero? The GoPro 7 Black. So to be entered in the contest, all you had to do was be signed up for the newsletter, which is why it's so important to sign up for the two-day photography bootcamp so that you can be a part of future giveaways. Everybody who's on the email list is automatically entered. So we got a surprising over 500 people entered in the month of December, which is awesome. So then it came time to pick a winner. So to pick a winner, I imported our entire list into a random name picker, which you can find the exact one that I used over at miniwebtool.com/random-name-picker. Okay. So once I did all that, it was a lot of emails. I went ahead and pressed enter to pick a random name, and I have it. The winner of the GoPro 7 Black is Chris Thompson from right here in the USA. So today we have two Chris's on today's podcast, which is awesome. So Chris, since you are not in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group, you need to check your email so that I know where to send this beauty. So, Chris, maybe you should sign up for the, or maybe you should join the Facebook group and get notified much quicker. But regardless, congratulations, Chris. That was a complete blast. I know that you're going to love this camera as much as I love mine. It, even though it's so small, and I don't know, It is fundamentally, I think, changed how I view photography. So, Chris, I know that you're going to enjoy it. All right, guys, that was our interview today. Why don't you join me again next week, and we will do it all over again. So there you have it. Until next week, I want you to get out. I want you to keep shooting. I want you to focus on yourself and stay safe, okay? That is it. I love you all.
If you enjoy today's podcast, please leave us a review in iTunes or your favorite podcast player. And continue the conversation with Raymond and other listeners of the podcast by joining the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group today. Thank you. We'll see you again next week.